very good morning to you. Secretary of Defense is standing by to make a statement, evidently, or he's appearing in public, and I guess we'll make some comments relative to the events in the Malaccan Strait involving the USS McCain from late yesterday afternoon.
Personal message of the truth, what he will decide. Here's James Mattis now from overseas.
I'm the special presidential envoy with whom I work so closely as the Department of Defense works with and in support of our Department of State and its foreign policy. I want to begin by saying that my thoughts and prayers are with the sailors and the families of the USS John McCain. We obviously have an investigation underway, and that will determine what happened. I also fully support the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral John Richardson's efforts right now. He has put together a broader inquiry to look into these incidents and to determine any of the causal factors, to determine what's going on, both immediate contributors to this incident, but also any related factors. And once we have those facts, we'll share them with you.
You're referring to Fitzgerald, sir? I mean, together with this? Or is that where you're
plural? The Chief of Naval Operations broader inquiry will look at all related accidents, incidents at sea, that sort of thing. He is going to look at all factors, not just the immediate ones, which will fall rightly under the Fleet Commander's investigation of what happened to his ship. But this is a broader look at what is happening.
So, sorry, is that broader Seventh Fleet's investigation?
Yes, it is. And as we discussed Saturday on the airplane coming out, this trip is part of the by, with, and through effort with our allies. It is what we're going to do here is find how we can better support one another. It's a constant.
All right, that's the Secretary of Defense speaking very quickly at another event and made comments relative to the USS John McCain. Interesting, a broader inquiry. We'll start the show now. Stand by. Targets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. I wanted my cake and eat it too. I wanted it both ways. Fame made me a balloon, cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. And it was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee of loosely abused ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Woo! Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get was bittersweet. It's like winning a used me. I'm blinded cause I think I'm getting so huge. I need a shrink, I'm beginning to lose sleep. One sheep, two sheep, going cuckoo and kooky is cool key. But I'm actually weirder than you think, cause I'm
friends with the monster.
.705 on a Monday morning, and probably like a lot of Marines and sailors around the world, the news of yesterday afternoon was stunning to me. And I was with my daughter up makeup shopping in Los Angeles. Yeah, I can admit that. And so when I saw the first news, actually my nephew, Alex, texted it to me right away. Before it was on the Associated Press, before it was on the major wires or anything, he said, "Hey, Uncle Michael, what's up with this?" And I looked and it's like somebody gut punched me. So then I, you know, what's amazing, I have learned, I've become a fan of Twitter. not for the opinion pieces, because nothing really allows you to show your ass like Twitter. But when news breaks, news organizations update that thing really quick. And so in short, probably within 5 or 10 minutes, there was images of the weather. There was images of traffic, water traffic in the region. And you're sitting there just watching it, this story kind of develop along with additional information about the events. And really the best source was the Pacific Fleet Public Affairs people, who I thought did an exceptional job. They simply kept updating a release. They'd release it again with additional information. It's amazing how quickly that information, to include pictures and graphs, weather and all of that, gets out there. And then, then the news that, that 5 were injured and 10 were missing. And I have to tell you, this whole experience for me is dependent, is obviously a very different experience. And I recall the words of John Kelly, when he lost his son, Robert. He said, many times I've written to, families letters saying that I had 3 kids and I shared their feelings. And he said, I want to apologize for saying that because I had no idea what you were going through. Only now can I truly understand what you're going through. And so so then you sit there and you think, wait a minute. We did this once, less than 60 days ago, and we lost 7 sailors, died at night in their sleep, and now we've done it again. Now, just recently, in the last, 30 minutes, I've seen video of what the hole looks like, and it looks, very much the same kind of a damage. That large ball that sticks out of the front part of a ship, hit them at the water line, and so I guess that's what they dealt with. 5:52 or something like that was the time of the collision. And so, but the thing that we all know who've been to sea is there's no excuse for it. You can talk about, and again, when you look at the radar picture, the weather's clear, I think everybody's asking the same question, what is going on with the United States Navy? What is going on? So we'll talk about that today. We'll also talk about the president's address tonight to the American people. And about Afghanistan. So we'll talk about that today, and probably more tomorrow than today. So again, the guy who's at the Secretary of Defense, his national security advisor, and Rex Tillerson, I mean, pretty experienced team relative to the history of conflict and global affairs. So we'll see. You know, the biggest thing that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary Mattis argued for in testimony in and out of uniform was a strategy that would allow the United States to win and achieve its strategic goals in Afghanistan. So we'll see what the president has to say tonight. And that'll be interesting. Two other things we're going to talk about today are events in Boston over the weekend. They were supposed to have some freedom speech thing that involved the white supremacists and that group. And so I don't know if you watched what happened in Boston over the weekend, but pretty interesting. Well done by the Boston police, first of all. And then we'll also talk about monuments again. In a discussion that's kind of gripping the nation, it's very interesting that the people I met have asked me my opinion over the course of the weekend. What do you think? And none of them, interestingly enough, none of them rejects the notion that, that we shouldn't, bleach our history, which surprised me a little bit, because some of them, I would tell you, I would have suspected that they would lean that direction, right? But they were very open to the idea of not bleaching our history, because it's not the way we do it here in the United States. And this notion of a better understanding of the time, also the appropriateness of statues outside public buildings, particularly statues of Confederate leaders outside our buildings. And then the issue the Army is dealing with, bases named for Confederate leaders. So we'll talk about that too. So Tom Drowdy going to join us this morning. Phil Smith going to join us. I'm trying to get Montana Man to come on, but he's ignoring me today. You know, so what a clown. So we'll talk about all these things. But I think, again, like most of any, like most Marines and sailors, went to bed shaking my head, you know. In fact, spoke with both my sons late yesterday afternoon. And, you know, we're all having the same conversation. How the fuck does this happen? And so no matter what we think, okay, and I saw somebody who wrote, hey, do you think the Russians have hacked into our into our satellites and they're steering ships into us? The Russians can hack all they want. But every one of these ships has sailors on the outside with night vision devices, with day vision devices, to as a backup to radar. Every one of them. On a clear evening, I mean, these ships are gigantic that we're running into. So whether our radars have been, you know, deceived or not is irrelevant, because the system is set up to account for flaws, electronic flaws. 17 people possibly dead. So, anyway, we'll get the show going here. United States Marine Corps band makes it official. Honestly, on a somber, sad Monday morning for the Department of the Navy. And we all share in that. Those of us who have gone to sea, lived at sea, and are soldiers of the sea, we share that naval tradition. But I think all those of us in the Marine Corps have certain opinions about the Navy. While we've been fighting along with the Army and limited participation of the United States Navy ashore in the blood sacrifice this nation has made, certainly their EOD, certainly their Seabees have paid a price. And there's been limited numbers of other, like electronic warfare and things like that. The Navy largely hasn't participated. And I think a lot of Marines will tell you, be very critical of the Navy, they've gotten soft and undisciplined. And so what the explanation is going to be for the Fitzgerald is, this is just my, talking to my girlfriend on a phone, right? On the internet, not paying attention, sleeping, it'll be some permutation of that. Because there's no excuse for it. And now this, on the heels of that, in an area of the world where there's a lot of traffic, I spoke with a surface warfare officer, and I'll tell you that in a minute. But look, when you're in the vicinity of the Malaccan Straits, it's not just another transit. When I was on the Ranger, we were at general quarters going through the Malaccan Straits. Yeah, general quarters. All hands, man your battle stay. And we stayed there. So, this morning with a very heavy heart. Good morning to you. United States Marine Corps band makes it official, as I said a minute ago.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
Currently 79 degrees under partly cloudy skies in Quantico, Virginia. 82 under mostly cloudy skies at Camp Lejeune. 80 and sunny, 84 and sunny in Granbury. Going to be hot in Texas today. 53 in Big Timber, Montana. Trying to get the Montana man to come on. I've now resorted to verbal abuse. That's right. 29 Palms, 77 degrees under sunny skies. Camp Pendleton, 60 under cloudy skies. Camp Smith, warm. 79 cloudy and dark in Hawaii. Okinawa, 85 cloudy and dark. Rocca has cooled off. It's only 100 in Rocca late in the day. 68 degrees at the home of All Marine Radio. Looking for a high of 75 beautiful degrees. We'll take a break. When we come back, I've got a couple emails that I'll get to already. And then Tom Drowdy is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, Brigadier General, United States Marine Corps. And we'll get Tom's opinion on monuments and ships, two big topics that we're talking about today. I'm negotiating with Montana Man. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Montana Man is going to join us. Let me read you one letter, and then I probably won't even take a break, and we'll get Tom Drowdy on. I'll just do it live. Yeah, love that live production stuff. So people who listen have kids. I mean, like me. I mean, they have kids in the military. So let me get rid of Kid Rock. That's it. That's a tribute to. To Montana Man, who just agreed to make an appearance this morning. And the reason that I want to talk about these things this morning is all these guys are bothered by this stuff that they see, and they all have opinions, and they're all smart. And what I see on TV, quite frankly, is shit. Right, it's America at its worst. It is what sells, and that is sex, right? And so the hottest, stupidest, you know, morons. But what advances the discussion? What makes the discussion better? So let me read you an email entitled "Word from the Field." While FaceTiming with my ensign on Friday, they were in port in Bahrain. I asked her what she is seeing on watch. She said the crew is exhausted, some sailors getting maybe 3 or 4 hours of cumulative sleep a day. Now, they're in Bahrain, so they're in the Persian Gulf. This morning I chatted with a high school friend that retired to the Navy as a master chief. He was on the USS Stark when it got shot in the face by an Iraqi missile in May of 87. I arrived in the Persian Gulf shortly thereafter. Carriers didn't go in the Persian Gulf at that time, but I was there. I got there probably in July, August of 87. He has four sons in the Navy and obviously some very good contacts still in the fleet. He said the same thing. Exhaustion, poor training, and an over-reliance on radar to keep them clear. Many have lost their skills at maintaining good visual lookout. Obviously, the lesson of the Fitzgerald did not make an impression on them. Okay. But let me tell you, nothing's changed on watch bills in terms of people that are external to the ship whose responsibility it is in case something doesn't get seen on radar that they see it. And I to be honest with you, I don't know that I buy the whole exhaustion thing. A ship at sea, I didn't see that many. We were at general quarters on an aircraft carrier off the coast of Iran right after the Stark thing happened. You know, and what, you have a four-hour watch and you can't stand outside and look and not see an oil tanker? Come on, that's a joke. And again, let me tell you, so I'll be very curious. That I'll be stunned if the results of the investigation are that these people were overworked and therefore they were neither of the two people on watch, nobody watching the radar plot, all those people were all overworked and were I would bet my bottom dollar that's not going to be the conclusion of either one of these investigations. This is just my opinion. From watching them for years. The Navy is a soft organization. Okay? And when you have this kind of... Now, if all 10 of these sailors are lost, that's 17 sailors in less than 90 days lost as they collide into gigantic ships on clear nights. If the first one wasn't bad enough, what do you say to the parents of the second one? And there's no excuse for it. Absolutely no excuse for it. And if you're too tired and you can't stand your post, then you need to say that to somebody. The solution isn't go to sleep. But I'll tell you what, I would bet my bottom dollar that is not going to be the findings of the investigation. And if you notice in the investigation that was released late last week on Thursday afternoon, they released the portion of the investigation that dealt with everything after the two ships collided. Because let me tell you, in my opinion, people are going to go to the brig because of that. And they should. When your negligence results in death, you ought to go to the brig. And it's not like, you know, we were under fire, so I was paying attention to this, and it's not that. It is, you were supposed to be awake at night while they slept. It was your duty, it's your responsibility. And again, as I said, when I've seen these things in the Marine Corps happen, it's not the first time that you're going to see it. And I'll tell you, the Navy's got its own crisis. To me, if the admiral that commands the 7th Fleet survives this, it'll be a miracle. He ought to go. The command master chief of the 7th Fleet, he ought to go. And there ought to be a message sent to everybody. We don't tolerate this shit. I don't give a shit how tired you are. Put your hand up. We'll find somebody else to do it. But ship us colliding with other ships? That's a straight up joke. That is an awful, awful, awful event. All right, we're calling Tom Drowdy right now. Now that I'm fired up. No, I'm pissed. I mean, I like everybody is. How does this happen? So I don't know that these guys are going to have good examples, but they've been to sea. I don't know if Tom Drowdy answered yet. Oh, there he is.
Tom Drowdy.
Tom Drowdy, Mike McNamara. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Happy Monday to you.
Yeah, not really, though. I'm probably like you. And first, let's talk ships. You probably heard this news last night. Your thoughts when you heard that the USS McCain had collided with a oil tanker in the vicinity of the Straits of Malacca? What did you think?
Well, I'm really troubled. This is the fourth incident this year. January, the Antietam, ran aground. In May, the Lake Champlain ran into some Korean fishing vessels. And then, of course, in June, we had the Fitzgerald tragedy, and now this one. So, the Navy, I know we'll investigate this thoroughly, but, there's got to be, something. And this is not a case, as tragic as the Fitzgerald, and it was truly a tragedy. It took place in the middle of the night, and you and I both know how confusing things can be, in total darkness. But this latest one took place at 3 in the afternoon, 1500. So it's really, really puzzling. So it's got to call into question, a top-to-bottom review of what is the training and education of the personnel, of the watchstanders. Was everything working? I mean, if radar was working, that certainly would have picked up that you have a closing contact and that you've got to do some things about it, and that there should be some warnings that should take place. But if that's not the case, then there's got to be more elementary than that. And is it? I have to say, and it's easy to scope another man's target. And I don't do this about the Navy, since I was a part of it for 4 years as a midshipman, and two of my children serve in the Navy. But were there distractions on the bridge? I have to wonder, with all of the potential distractions that we have in our lives of cell phones and other things that pull us away from the things we ought to stay focused on, could that have been a factor? I don't know, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone. I'm just saying that I know that the Navy will do a top-to-bottom review on this, but, this is certainly troubling for the Navy, but more importantly, tragic, loss of life in these last two incidents that we just have to find out what went wrong.
Sir, I would even submit to you I was on, back in the day, I was the executive officer of the Marine Detachment on the USS Ranger. I spent time in the Combat Information Center because in 1987, we had intelligence that said the Iranians knew that the SeaWiz did not, which is the close-in air defense system for our surface ships, did not track anything slower than 120 knots, and so that they were going to fly a Cessna out and run it into one of our ships and fly it when we're near a commercial airline lane, and so it would fly like a normal profile, then veer off, and before anything could touch it, try to slam into a carrier. So the response to that was, well, we'll put up 50 cals. I mean, it's a secondary and hopefully unneeded line of defense, but it's other than that, we don't have an option. So I controlled all the weapons, and so when the CO would be on the bridge, I'd be on the bridge, and when he wouldn't be on the bridge, I was down in the Combat Information Center, our equivalent to the Combat Operations Center, and so I got to watch how the surface plot got worked. I got familiar with the watch section and how they worked. And this is back in the day before all the fancy radars, when they had your basic surface radar, and they had the guys who plotted stuff who wrote backwards on plexiglass, and that was an actual MOS. I don't know. I think those guys were called OSs, but they wrote backwards. They stood behind a piece of glass, and they wrote backwards on it with different colored grease pencils. To update the surface plot. And what you did all night was you simply prosecuted every surface contact by labeling it and tracking it. And that's what you do. Now, I know nothing has changed. The radars have gotten better, but there still is a watch built in which there's people on the external part of the ship that spot things and update situations, because that's a necessary part of a watch bill. And yes. I, for me, I don't know, there can be no excuse that possibly we've lost 17 sailors in 90 days and to lose 10 after you lost 7. And everybody should have got a boot up their ass about the way we do business is disheartening. And I just had an experience recently. Well, you know, I have a son that's out in the Pacific that's part of the 31st MEU. He's in a helicopter company. And when the Osprey goes in the water and you see that on the Associated Press, you know, your thought is, I'm not doing this as a combatant anymore. I'm doing this as a dependent now.
Yeah.
And it's an unpleasant experience. Holy shit, is that my kid in the water off the coast of Australia fighting for his life? To think that my son or daughter died because two ships rammed into each other and one was a United States warship and I lost one of my babies because of that? I'd be so mad. And again, I knowing that there is no excuse for it. So I don't know. What,
well, you, I just two things. You talk about the CIC, and I used to work in that as a midshipman, you know, learning the trade as a Navy officer, and then even as a Marine, was on in CIC as making my way back to my battalion off the coast of Vietnam. But part of the things that they determine is what's called the CPA, the closest point of approach.
Right.
So based upon your speed and direction and the various contact speeds and direction, what will be the closest point of approach? And if it falls within certain parameters, then there's got to be some adjustments that would be made. But, yeah, I'm with you all the way. The other thing I would tell you, though, and the Navy, as I say, will investigate this thoroughly. The Navy has, you know, a strict, as it should, rule of accountability. And there was a great piece in the Wall Street Journal back in the 50s when the Hodgson was cut in half by the destroyer, the Wasp. This was two U.S. warships. And it went through the accountability factor and the cruel, or so it would seem, accountability that the dead captain on the Hodgson was at fault and would be found at fault. And that, for anyone who commands the ship or is on the watch boat or whatever, they had to understand that the accountability that they to which they're going to be held. Otherwise, who would sleep below decks at night unless there was that strict accountability? So, you know, these are at a minimum career enders, but even worse is the loss of life that has taken place because of something that went wrong. And once again, I'm confident that the Navy will determine what went wrong and then we'll fix it.
I'll read you an email and then I want to switch gears and ask you about monuments. Hey Mac, I'm with you. I have over the course of years see the Navy get more and more soft. Certainly the CBs that we served with in Iraq and Afghanistan are tough as are their SEALs. But the go to sea Navy has largely been absent from the fight. In my opinion, from seeing them, and this is my experience on MEUs and around port, they have got more and more civilianized. They are not a hard organization like they used to be after World War II. That was a tough Navy. And those sailors hung around into the 60s, and the Navy had an edge to it. They don't have that anymore. It pains me to say that because we're all part of the Department of the Navy this morning, and we're proud of that. The Navy isn't like the Marine Corps, but they can take us anywhere and keep us there for as long as somebody tells them to. And nobody else on the planet can do that. But this is absolutely disturbing. I think it smells of a lack of discipline. And I agree with you, Mac. I believe that they're going to find, whether they're sleeping, on the internet, on the phone talking to their girlfriend, you are going to find distracted sailors not devoted to their task. And the leadership above them not supervising. When I was on ship, when the guys on the bridge, or whatever you call that thing, crow's nest or whatever, didn't check in, somebody went to check on them. Now, there's no way a ship of that size can close with you from the horizon in less than an hour. It simply isn't happening. And so what you're talking about is people in complete dereliction of duty. Last night when I saw this, it sickened me to think that the memo didn't get taken to heart after 7 sailors died in their sleep on the Fitzgerald is just disgusting. I pray that there's a different explanation to it, but I don't think there will be. It was clear weather in both cases, and how you go bump in the ocean with such large object can only be through negligence. No other excuses. And I agree with you. If the Admiral of the 7th Fleet survives this, it'll be a miracle. My thoughts and prayers go out to the 10 families that have been notified and are praying to God for a miracle that their sailor, somehow or other, survives this ordeal. Enjoy the program. Enjoy General Droughty whenever he comes on. All the best with a heavy heart. There's a lot there, sir. If you want to comment, fine. Not if you don't want to comment, that's fine, too.
But the only thing I can't comment on, Mac, is the evaluation of the Navy. I've been away for a while. We all have our perceptions. When I was on active duty, which was a long time ago, that was not my perception of the Navy. And of course, at every service, you've got varieties of performance and quality and so forth. But I never had a hesitation about going aboard ship, because I knew that the CO of that ship was going to be held strictly accountable for the safety of all of us. And another question in my mind about the professionalism of the Navy. So, again, that was my impression. Your reader has a different one, and I respect that. He has good points about the questions of how could this happen. And once again, I just go back to, the jury almost literally is still out. But I can assure you that with 4 incidents in 1 year, that the Navy is taking this very, very seriously and is going to get a top-to-bottom review and investigation and find out what has gone wrong and fix it quickly.
My guest, retired Marine Corps Brigadier General Tom Droughty, gracious enough to hop on with us this morning. We're going to talk to Phil Smith, and we'll talk to who's a retired colonel, and then we'll talk to Rob Schwarz, retired lieutenant colonel. And I'm just curious, just to get their thoughts on two issues that have that really have dominated the news over the course of the last 1 week, and then the other the last 24 hours. So, what about the whole thought of your thoughts on how we deal with? I want to say I'll give you 3 separate genres. One is Confederate monuments. 2 is Confederate monuments in front of public in-use buildings, county courthouses and things like that, that are functioning today. And 3, Confederate names on United States on Philip Round in-duty United States Army bases. Maybe your general thoughts on the way we view Civil War history. And then I separate those 3 things in my mind anyway. So your thoughts, monuments.
Sure. Well, first of all, in no way, shape, or form can I or you make an observation from the standpoint of an African American in doing this. But let me just step back and answer your question. In my teaching, I am reinforced more and more by the fact that our students, our youngsters, are historically illiterate. And it's not their fault, it's our fault as adults. But it's not just the youngsters, it's so many adults who are historically illiterate. So here's my take on the statue and names and so forth. I'll quote President Barack Obama, who said, at times we have to seize what are called teachable moments. And in my view, the statues, where they are, the names that are in place, provide for us as Americans teachable moments. Now, are they moments of pride? In the case of slavery, absolutely not. But it's still part of history. It happened. And to destroy what shames us, I think, is a terrible mistake, because we have to be reminded, I believe, from time to time of what we were at one time and then what we are now and what made the difference. And these teachable moments, I think, are especially critical for parents who have a youngster who would hopefully point at a statue and say, Daddy, what is that about? Who is that? And what is that? And to, then, for, of course, the parents to be able to answer that and then create that dialogue of what and who we were at one time, but where we are now. And as a result of that, you know, the improvement, the betterment that we have as a result of recognizing the shame of parts of our past. If we destroyed what shames us, then why wouldn't the Germans destroy every death camp? But they haven't. They're maintained and they're used for people to come through and to see what? For the honor and glory of the German people? Absolutely not. But rather as a reminder of what happened at one time in the German history that brought them to that degradation through how they treated Jews and others that they considered not good. My wife was the one who raised that example, and I thought it was a perfect one. Another one is in the Paris Cemetery, there's a statue of a Jew in one of the concentration camps. Gee, why would they have that? Because of the many Jews who were rounded up in Paris and sent off to the concentration camps. And then once again, I think it provides to the beholder that question, what is this about? What? Why did people treat one another that way? And how have we become better as a result of it? So my take on it is this view of destroy those things that bring about a shameful image of our past. You know, we're human beings. We made some terrible mistakes in our evolution as human beings as well as Americans. And I think to say, gee, it didn't happen or it was so bad we're not going to even remember it, I think is a horrible, horrible mistake.
Okay, so let me ask you, and I know you're short on time, so I'll keep you for about 5 more minutes. So let me ask you about those three, and I agree with you. The bleaching of history is not a good thing, but how we deal with it is another. How we handle these teachable moments. What do we do with it? For instance, let me give you a conundrum. A functioning courthouse that has the statue of a Confederate general out in front of it. Is that appropriate? United States Army bases named after Confederate generals, is that appropriate? I certainly understand why they were named like that. Is that appropriate, and how do we deal with it?
Well, we have an issue right here in Tampa, Mac, the statue of a Confederate soldier outside the county courthouse. And,
right.
And the vote, interestingly enough, has gone back and forth to keep it, remove it. And it's a local vote. And in a case like that, I think we're a democracy. So those who are in charge of would have that decision, that should be their choice. It should not be a mandate from the federal government.
Okay.
But in the case of the naming of places, you know, what... The problem I see with this, Mac, is where do we end this? You know, 42 of the 56 signers of our Declaration and the Constitution were slaveholders. Do we eliminate all that? Here's an interesting thing. In the Bill of Rights, there is a conspicuous absence of a certain pronoun. And that pronoun is she, her, or hers. So you can say, well, the writers were sexist, so do we eliminate the Bill of Rights, starting off with, you know, the First Amendment?
Right.
And again, I'm not saying this to say, well, they're all good and right and proper. No. But to, as you call it, bleach history, I think is absolutely wrong. And then, again, I think it provides to us a point of departure from which we have evolved. And to eliminate that point of departure means, you know, when we determine how we got to where, and how do we avoid making mistakes that we made at one time in our difficult, challenging past to bring us to where we are and to take us further to where we've got to go.
Okay, so how do we treat them then? And again, what I said is, look, that's that Confederate soldier out in front of the courthouse in Tampa, that's only part of the story. The other part of the story was, what was Tampa's role in the slave trade? Did it have any? How many people were enslaved in the county that you live in today, Tom? And so to me, you have a choice, in my opinion. You can relocate that statue to a museum, and also around that, talk about the cost of slavery. Tell the whole story. And don't bleach it, but tell the complete story. How would you tell the complete story? Because I don't think it's told today, and I agree with you. You know what? 12 of our first 18 presidents, in some way, shape, or form, owned slaves, to include Grant at one point. You know, he married a woman who she owned slaves. And they became his property. And so, how do we teach that? And even after the Civil War, there was no question of giving blacks the right to vote. You know, nobody thought that they were equal, for God's sakes, but people just were against slavery. So telling that story, how do we do that?
Well, again, it's just through history, and it's through teaching history and civics, if there is still such a course these days,
probably
about our government and how it works and it's supposed to work, to include the changes, the corrections that our government makes when it realizes they didn't get it right with just the Constitution, and therefore these things called amendments, and the first 10 of the Bill of Rights that ensures that those things that are necessary for a true republic, in addition to a democracy, is able to stand. So I guess my point is, we have, certainly you can go to a museum, but I don't see the museums being overrun with individuals. When you have a public place where you have a figure, an example of something that is part of the history of that area, and maybe in this case not a good or positive or a wonderful history, but a negative one certainly, again, it provides that opportunity for that dialogue, for that discussion.
Okay, but how do we do it? Because if it's just that statue standing there alone, there is no corresponding teachable moment. We're just walking by a monument.
Okay, so the statue goes, and what do you have? A blank spot.
Okay, then build something there with it to at least tell the complete story.
And that would be up to the local to do that. Thus far, that has not been one of the options considered. It is
right.
Strictly now about the statue, go or no go. And you can see the difficulty. It has gone back and forth a couple of times as to displace it or retain it. So, you know, lots of discussion in this, as there should be. It's an important issue. And that's, again, what our country is about, is that ability to discuss, to vote on it, and then to live with the decision, or if you don't like the decision, then to vote out the decision makers, or to make a change through other means. But again, in a peaceful way, that is what we're supposed to be about.
All right, sir. I know you're working today, and so I will let you go. I hope you don't mind if you teach history. And you're involved in it, and have always, from what I know, always been involved in the study of history. I agree with you. These are teachable moments. And we have to come together. I shouldn't say that as a nation, because it's impossible. We have to have a discussion about the reality of how many nations in 1776 had slaves in them on the planet.
Yeah.
Right.
Let me leave you with the final bit of information. Do you know when Saudi Arabia eliminated slavery?
When?
1962. Astounding, isn't it?
Yes.
And so, and I don't say that to excuse or anything. It's just that this has been a condition of human beings for a long, long time, a horrible condition, one that and a lot of great individuals gave their lives to eliminate and then to to preserve the dignity of individuals. Those great five words of all men are created equal, that they mean something. But again, Mac, I'm just afraid that that gets lost when history is just one of those throwaway subjects that has no meaning because it has no relevance. Well, it has tremendous relevance in who we are today and what we hope to be tomorrow.
It's the true story of the nation. But if you only communicate in 140 characters, and then you take those stories and you throw them up on our 24-hour news cycle, and as we've all seen this last week, the dialogue gets overheated, and it gets ridiculous. But it seems like that's the way the nation communicates now.
I'm about to have my first class, and what I'm telling the students is, I want to discuss. I want to develop critical thinking, which means analyzing and learning, and to agree agree to disagree without being disagreeable, and somehow we seem to have lost that in our country. But before I go, a reminder that tonight the president is going to talk about our strategy in Afghanistan. So I hope your listeners will pay attention to that.
No, we absolutely will. And let me tell you, it will have Marine handprints from the Pentagon, the SecDef, and then now the Chief of Staff of the White House will all have weighed in on these discussions. And it will be uniquely Marine, maybe not authored, but certainly tailored and recommended. So our eyes will be on it. Sir, thank you very much for hopping on.
Okay, anytime. God bless you, and Semper Fidelis.
Semper Fidelis. That is Brigadier General Tom Drowdy. Email. Hey, Mac, you're pretty hard on the Navy. I hope there's a different explanation. I've been to sea like you have, and I know the way, this stuff is supposed to work, and there is no excuse. The bottom line, there is absolutely, positively no excuse for this stuff. Ships have gone to sea in this country for long, 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 long periods of time. Hundreds of years. We now have the technology. To monitor things all over the world from any location. But it is a matter of discipline. The watches go up there multiple times every day to do something that is mundane. That is, keep us from bumping into other ships. It was my experience going through the Malaccan Strait that the watch bills were plussed up. I heard you say a few minutes ago that on the Ranger you were at general quarters. That was not uncommon given the number of pirates in the region. Quite a number of ships did that. Is it taxing? Yes. But come on. Is it as taxing as other things that are done by military organizations around our world? Absolutely not. And if you're too tired, you have to put your hand up and say you are. I am very anxious to see the results of the investigation into the Fitzgerald. I think a lot of us are. I hope that there is some other explanation, but we all know there is none. On a clear night with a giant tanker with all that radar, what in God's name could have happened? And I keep my fingers crossed, like you do, I'm sure, that there is some other factor. But the message we all got sent last week, that the CO, the XO, and the Command Master Chief being relieved tells you that it is not going to be good. My heart is heavy for the families of these 10 sailors that have died in such a senseless way. It's not a good morning for the Department of the Navy, that's for sure. Enjoy the program. Thanks for what you do. I don't know that this conversation is going on a whole lot of places around the world. Go All Marine Radio. Semper Fidelis. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Phil Smith's going to join us. We're going to talk about the same things. Ships and Monuments, more of All Marine Radio on a Tuesday, coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.